The Walk the Mile podcast is produced on Gadigal land. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which Skegg Stallinghurst stands, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to elders past and present. May our reconciliation be an ongoing process of love and compassion. Hello everyone, I'm Gary Lee Lindsay, school chaplain at Skegg Stallinghurst, and you're listening to Walk the Mile, a podcast that opens up conversations that we need to have. We're family. Hello everyone, great to have you here with us. We have a very special guest today. Needs no introduction, although there might be some people. I know that some people have heard this who haven't had anything to do with the school before listening to this. I've got some feedback around that. So you might need some introduction, but today we're speaking with our head of school, Miss Jenny Allen. How are you, Jenny?
I'm well, thank you, Gary. Hello, everybody.
Good to have you here with us. I thought it'd be right, be right, to get a bit of an insight into what our head of school thinks about a whole range of things, and get to know what makes her tick a little bit, but also just understand what she sees happening here at Skegg Stallinghurst. So you've been the principal here, head of school, for 26 years, is that right?
This is my 26th year.
You're 26 years. And did you always aspire, did you always have aspirations to becoming a head of a school, do you think?
Well, my initial ambition from a young age was to be a physicist, but I didn't do particularly well at physics at university. That's another story. and I just sort of fell into a DBED after my science degree, and actually sort of within the first week I knew that it was right for me. And pretty soon on I did sort of toy with the idea that it'd be great to be a principal, because I joke that I like the power, but I have been aware of some schools that I've been in, and particularly in my own schooling, where I have felt that I would like to be able to shape a school into something which was different to some other ones that I've seen. So,
right,
and probably easier to shape it from the top.
Yeah, of course. Have that opportunity. So when you were at school, mm-hmm. did you have the same sort of thoughts? Like when you were going through school, did you think, if I was the head of this school, I would do things differently?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, right.
Many, many times, and sometimes extremely passionately, and with conviction that I wanted to, I was going to come back here and change this.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't. But
right. But what were those things about the structure? Was it the way that things were taught? Was it the overall philosophy?
I think it was, and it's not fair to the school that I did go to, because I think that it's partly a difference in time.
Yeah.
But it was not a particularly compassionate time or a particularly understanding mm-hmm. time. And I did actually go back to teach there for a few years, quite early in my career. And I will just tell you one story that I think sort of demonstrates how I felt. When I was in year 11, my parents separated, and that, you know, nothing sort of special, just a really fairly vanilla separation of the marriage, but that's not easy for kids to go through that. And when I went back, one teacher who had taught me when I was in year 11 said to me, we knew you were going through a tough time, you know, when you were in year 11 and year 12. And so I'm now a sort of 23-year-old woman, And these tears just welled up in my eyes, and I thought, how could you never have shown me that? And I was quite, you know, sort of swayed by this amazing conviction that any school that I was going to be, I was going to be able to influence, was never going to be like that.
Yeah,
that
right.
we were going to be able to show kids that we were human, and that we could have good relationships between teachers and students, and that we could show that we knew and understood what they were going through, and that it was okay to be vulnerable and human and understanding and compassionate.
No, that's great, Jenny. I think that's obvious here, and it's obvious by your leadership and what you see as important here. I never feel like Skeggs is just a bunch of classrooms and teachers coming in to teach. I think it's, you know, for me, it's far more the community and what happens in the community as well, which is just as important as the academics, I guess.
And it's also about, you know, sort of student voice and listening. You know, that if you don't listen to kids, and if you don't demonstrate that you care about what students say and that you want to hear and understand, then you'll never have those really right relationships. That of course there is a lot of knowledge and skill that teachers have that they have to impart to their students, but there is also a lot of knowledge and skill about what it means to be a good human, and unless you actually listen to what kids are saying about themselves and their lives, you can't really help them to be their best selves. And in the end, mathematics and science and history and so on are really important, but helping young people to be good humans who can live fulfilled lives has got to be the ultimate you know, sort of responsibility or job of the school.
Was that modelled to you by teachers at your school?
At the school that,
that you went to?
No, I don't think I would have felt that. And I don't want to be seen to be too condemning of the school, because I think, as I said, I think times are extremely different. You know, I was at school 40 or 50 years ago, and also I know and understand that I would not have been an easy student to have dealt with. So I don't feel badly about them. I just know what I want in a school that I'm in charge of.
So where do you think you got that from, that idea that you wanted within a school that people would be heard, as you said, students would be listened to?
I think it's because it was quite an impactful feeling that I had many times throughout my own schooling, that I was not understood, and that felt quite isolating, and that life in the world was hard for me, I think.
Yeah, that's
and given that I actually, you know, sort of in the scheme of things, my life was not so hard. It was it was you know, that there are people who suffer far, far more difficult things. But that even in a relatively, you know, relatively easy sort of life, you can feel very isolated and alone and ununderstood.
Yeah,
you know, a lack of understanding and a lack of compassion for the complexities of life. Whatever they might be for an individual.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, as I said before, I think you do you promote that well, and you lead that well here at Skeggs. Do you see that as part of? Sorry if this sounds like a dumb question, but often when I hear people talking about education, that part of it isn't necessarily brought into the conversation. So you obviously see that as part of education, of educating children.
Yes, indeed. Obviously, I want students who leave Skeggs to be well educated, to you know, understand the major disciplines of you know, of our amazing society, to have the skills to get a great job, to, you know, sort of that well educated in the widest possible sense. But I would that they were good people, when they left school that they were good people who were comfortable in their own skin and were going to be able to lead fulfilled, flourishing lives is more important to me than, you know, what particular ATAR or something, or, you know, that you can go back. You know, I mean, I think I'm quite impacted by my mother who, of her age, left school, did a secretarial course. When she got married, she stopped working and was never really fulfilled in that role and went back and before mature age entry, did a high school certificate exactly the same as I was doing and went on and got a university degree and did extremely well as a clinical psychologist. Yeah. And I could see, you know, that fulfillment that she wasn't, that wasn't, you don't have to get everything done by the time you're at school, but you do have to be a fully formed human adult by the time you know, sort of soonish after you leave school.
Yeah.
And so that the values and the sense of self would probably be most important to me when I think about girls leaving skigs.
Yeah. I remember one speech night, his name's just gone out of my head. His brother was the treasurer. Tim Costello.
Yeah.
That's him. Tim Costello, talking about encouraging kids to have a vocation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm hearing a bit of that in what you're saying. You know, you want kids not just to think about their occupation, but who they're becoming. And what they're passionate about, and developing themselves in a way. Is that right, do you think?
I don't really know exactly what the word vocation means, but I do think that being a good person who is comfortable in their own skin, who knows how to live a good life, who knows what will a good life look like for a person. Those things are important to me. To feel good about yourself, to be able to have good relationships, to be a person of integrity, to care about others as well as yourself. All of those things, I think, are as important a part of education as maths and science and sport.
Do you think we're going on that trajectory? Do you think that education as a whole here in Australia or in New South Wales, do you think that a lot of schools are following along that path, or policies are following along that path even?
I think that most schools understand that completely, and I think it's quite at odds with what sort of politicians and governments articulate, that this focus on being in the top 10 in PISA. Rankings, OECD rankings and so on, seems to me to be the antithesis of what I think that most schools are trying to do, which is of course to turn out well-educated, young men and young women, but also to worry about the whole person. And the more we measure, the more we focus on those things that we can measure, and we lose a whole lot of things that are actually more important that you can't measure.
Mm. Now, your role is multifaceted.
Indeed.
Indeed. On any given day, you could be doing a whole range of things.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Otherwise, I'd be just twiddling my thumb and doing one thing.
What do you reckon, in your role, if you had to say, what would be one of the things that you find most challenging?
I mean it's quite trite, I suppose, to say that the hardest thing is to sort of to try to fit in everything that you would like to do in a day. I am quite conscious that the way you should think about your working life is that you've only got, 24 hours of the day, and you've got to, eat and sleep and look after your husband and family and friends and stuff, but so that you've only got a certain amount of, sort of working hours in the day, and you can't make more I say I could do every part of my job better if I had 28 hours in the day instead of 24, but I don't. And so that perhaps the hardest thing is to try to, you know, be wise enough to choose the right things, the right priorities to spend your working hours. That's probably the hardest part.
Yeah, because I can imagine it being all-consuming. You know, you've always got something. You're never twiddling your thumbs. You've always got something to think about or to do. So how do you make sure that you have that time where, you know, can you just switch off?
Oh, yeah, I think I'm a pretty good compartmentalist. I think I can... well, actually, I'm not sure that I ever really leave, the job ever really leaves me. But I do think that whilst part of my brain can be just thinking about the problems of the day or the week or the month or the year, whilst I'm doing a crossword puzzle or cooking dinner or something, I can still find that quite relaxing.
So I
certainly feel that I am able to live a balanced life and not be consumed by the job,
sure.
Even though I do work very long hours. I know I work long hours, but I get a great sense of joy and satisfaction from it, and I don't feel that I, you know, sort of run myself ragged or anything.
Do you reckon you get energy from some of the parts of the work that you do?
Yeah, some parts. I'm quite an introverted, reserved person, really, and so I do retreat to my office every so often just to calm down and gain a little
Take
bit
a
more.
Break. Need some space.
And I know I get energy from that, and then I'll sort of, in a figurative way, go back out and do battle with the world. I also think get energy from the variety of the job. So I quite sort of enjoy the experience of, you know, being in a meeting, you know, and we're, you know, sort of planning some really long-term initiative of the school, and then the next minute I'm, you know, helping some, you know, third class girl who's lost a blazer and is crying because she's going to get into trouble at home, and you know, and then, you know, talking to a teacher about a particular issue, and that jumping around and agility of mind to, you know, sort of to focus on many, many different things of quite different, sitting still and listening to someone who's telling you a really distressing story, and then going out and, you know, sort of talking to, you know, a group of students about something that they could do differently. The strategic and the small, and the diversity of the job, I also think I get a great deal of energy and excitement in a way from that.
Because there is a lot of the immediate, isn't there? On any given day, as we said, it's pretty unpredictable what might come your way. But there's also this constantly, I guess, forward thinking about where you want the school to be. How you want it to look, I guess.
Yes, and I'm quite a list maker, but one of the skills or ways that I do try to operate is to break down large jobs into two or three of the first steps, and then that can sit on my list of things to do along with a few other quite small, trivial, possibly urgent things, but relatively small things. And that's a way that I can try to balance some of that long-term strategic thinking, the bigger jobs, as well as a few sort of clerical or incidental jobs.
Sure.
Make sure that everything gets as due attention as you can in 24 hours a day.
That's right. And speaking of the unpredictables, last year, COVID hits us.
Yeah.
How did you find all of that?
Well,
running a school in particular.
I did. I did find parts of it quite draining, and just for my own personal style, I do find some people's level of anxiety and panic and worry about what might happen sort of in a few weeks, or how they might, you know, deal with sort of planning, to be quite draining. So I did find the level of anxiety in society to be quite impactful on my own, you know, sort of well-being. Day to day, you know, you just do the best that you can. And I think that you can't, that's all you can do. You can just try to do the best that you can, to run a school, to keep people safe, to make decisions. One of the things which I found quite hard is that the rules were changing so quickly, and there was so little information out there that we were doing, you know, sort of the executive and I were doing a lot of research and talking and planning and trying to find information. And we weren't as collaborative as we would usually be, and I know that some staff found that you know, sort of undesirable, and we found it undesirable too. I am a person, I think, who really enjoys that collaboration and listening and trying to respond, but I also think there was so much work that we had to do to try to understand what the rules were and to think about how that might be implemented, that I felt that it was better to try to protect staff from understanding all of that themselves. So we were trying to protect staff, but I know that the impact of that, or the effect of that, has been that staff have felt that they were not quite as listened to, and it wasn't quite as collaborative a space as possible. So one of the things that I know we have to do now is to try to shift that balance back, so that, you know, we go back to the usual way of thinking about running of a school, which is a very collaborative exercise.
And now heading to the future.
Yes.
We've got this capital campaign.
Indeed.
Which was launched this week.
Last week.
Mm-hmm. Launched last week. The Lighter Path campaign, mm-hmm. which is to raise money for the refurbishment of Wilkinson House.
Yes.
And also to raise money for future scholarships.
Correct.
Have I got that right?
You've got that absolutely right, Gary.
Jeez, that was close. Now, I'm guessing that when you were thinking about being a principal, you know, when we talked before about, you know, having aspirations about changing schools and so on, did you ever think that you would have to work in the fundraising realm, so to speak?
Yes. Look, I've been a principal so long now that nothing surprises me, I think. But when I started to be a principal, I said that there wasn't anything that I was doing that I was surprised at.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single thing. I knew that I would be doing every separate part of the job that I was doing. So there was nothing new. But the enormity of it all was a great surprise to me. And the feeling of the onerous nature of being the boss was a surprise to me. So it wasn't that, oh my gosh, I have to suddenly, you know, be participating in the fundraising activities of the school, or oh my gosh, I didn't. So, who would have thought that you were going to be talking to parents about those sorts of things? It wasn't any one thing. It was just the entirety of it all that was quite surprising.
But you do it well. What I've noticed, I mean, I've seen you involved in the Diana Bowman Centre, JF building, Joan Freeman, and now this. And you always, I can see you always get quite excited when you're showing the plans to the kids and to staff, and you seem to have an extra drive behind it. What is it, do you think, about these campaigns and wanting, it's more than just nice buildings, isn't it? What is it?
Somebody Julie McCrossan once said that I was the Governor Macquarie of Skeggs, and I didn't really like that description.
I'm not sure what she meant.
Well, I think she meant that Governor Macquarie was a person who did a lot of building development of the early Sydney. And I would hate anybody to think that, you know, one of the things that I liked most was, you know, buildings. I don't think that's me at all.
No.
But I do like to try to communicate to people when I'm speaking, whether it's students or parents or staff or, you know, sort of externally in educational circles. I do like to communicate a message that I think is impactful. And the future of the school, I think, is something which is quite energising to me. Mm. I don't think that I speak about, the plans of Wilkinson House in a way any more energetically than I do about growing our scholarship fund or how I think we might be able to grow our pastoral program or how we might help our, students to be, more contributing members of society. I think all of those things, that long-term idea is important to me, and I love our strategic plan, our path ahead, which is the sort of the precursor or the foundation of which this capital campaign is built. And so I love talking about all of those aspects. It is quite interesting to, you know, sort of to see a building and to think about how it might be able to change teaching and learning, about how you might be able to have really great environmental sustainability in design,
yeah.
respect heritage and so on. I do think those things are really interesting, but yeah. I don't think they're more interesting than many of the other things that we're doing in planning for the future of the school.
Sure, sure. And in terms of the scholarships, do you have an idea as to who you would want in the future to get those scholarships?
Do you mean new scholarships?
Yeah.
So that we have this really strong commitment to increase scholarships at Skeggs to address social justice and disadvantage and reconciliation and so on. So we'd love to be able to offer more Indigenous scholarships in the primary school. That'd be our number one, you know, sort mm-hmm. of next step. I love having a number of other equity scholarships where I can offer a Skeggs education to other parts of society, which is also experiencing disadvantage. And I think that that idea of having as many scholarships as we can to celebrate a diversity of the student body, mm. And also to address disadvantage in society to the extent that we can. We're obviously not going to solve all of the problems of the world, but I think in our own small way we can contribute a fair deal to reconciliation and better outcomes for Indigenous our Indigenous population. Also to help our non-Indigenous students understand more about reconciliation and a more just society. But we love our location here in Darlinghurst, where we can appreciate the complexities of life and the dispossession that exists in a variety of different areas and try to make a difference in all of those too. Mm. And I think that scholarships and Skeggs education for families is one thing, working in the community is another. Appreciating the opportunities and advantages that we have, and realizing that from that great privilege comes obligation and responsibility to give back. Mm. All of those things, I think, are an important part of a Skeggs education.
And I think you've said that already. You want the girls to be those people who make an impact on others as well. It's not just for them.
Yeah.
But definitely making an impact.
And you would know that we've had discussions about the motto, Let Your Light Shine. I have said that if I was Edith Badham, knowing what was like in the 21st century, I might not have chosen that Bible passage, because I think that some people take that Let Your Light Shine to mean I want to be the centre of attention. I want the light to shine on me. I want to. This is about what can happen for me, and that's not what it's about. Mm. And so that idea that we might have been able to find a, or maybe we just need to communicate what the motto actually means better, which is really much more about let the light shine so that other people can have a better life, and that's a, so it's all about what I can do to make others, you know, better in some way, to be more cared for, to have a more egalitarian society, and that's what I think is so beautiful about the motto.
So imagine then, so if Edith Badham's looking back at 2021, Jenny Allum in, let's say, I don't know, 2041, you come back, let's say there's an event here, Ascension Day. You come back, you invite Jenny Allum back for Ascension Day, and you come into the grounds, what are you hoping to see? What are you hoping to hear about in 20 years' time? This is yours at the moment, your thing, you... And you come back to this place that you love, what are you hoping to see?
I'm hoping to see only girls.
Okay.
I'm hoping to see no more girls, just exactly the same size. We love. I love the size that we are, where we can really know everyone. I would like to... see and hear a buzz on the campus of girls who love their school and love learning and recognise that that they belong here and that hard work is good and that there is a dynamism and a vibrancy in trying to do the best that you can every day. And I think that sort of buzz about, you know, when you try something and it doesn't work, and then you try something and it doesn't work, and you can't get it, and you can't get it, and then you keep on trying, and then suddenly you do, you know, you cotton onto something, or you do see some relationship between some parts of mathematics or whatever it might be, whichever subject, and that that this aha moment of, oh, I worked so hard and now I get it. There is that joy and pride in achievement is a real buzz, and I hope to feel that too.
Thanks, Jenny. That's fantastic. It's been wonderful to hear what you have to say. No, it's very exciting. It's re-energized my passion for being here. Definitely.
Thank you, Gary.
I was going to ask you a few more questions, but we've run out of time. But you are a great leader, and I wanted to ask you a bit more about leadership, but maybe we'll leave that for another day.
We might do part two.
Part two, some other time. But it's been great spending time with you, so thank you for everything you've given. And thanks for everyone who's been listening. If you've got any feedback, if you've got any questions, you can even let Miss Allum know if you've got some feedback about what she said as well.
Send me an email, I'll answer.
Yes, she does. And as usual, if you've got something you'd like to talk about here, I'd be more than happy to hear from you. But thanks for joining us once again. I look forward to seeing you around the place. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.